Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 6:21 a.m. That is Taipei time. We just had a good-sized earthquake about 45 minutes ago, 5.9 on the Richter scale. So that was a wake-up call, shall we say. Well, I think when we look at what's happened in the bond markets today, it might be a wake-up call for anyone who has been long and leveraged, because the 10-year yield got down to 1.6%. And now we're starting to see at least some profit taking. When we flip that around and look at the futures price, well, I think it's a pretty similar story, that we've had a very impressive rebound. And now we're seeing that there's a short-term overbought condition. And I think we're potentially due another pause and consolidation. This has been a beautifully rhythmic uptrend in terms of the futures price. There have been a number of ranges almost equal in length, about 2 months, a little bit less, a little bit more, but about 2 months in duration. And then we've had these powerful breakouts. And what we've just seen is another powerful breakout. And now we're potentially due some consolidation. And if all things are going to persist, if a consistent trend is a trend in motion, it should continue to repeat the sequence, and therefore it could range for the next 2 months. But of course, when we look at the pace of the advance and the fact that we are now approaching the peaks put in back in 2016, it is worth considering that the price today is at a comparable level to where it was in 2016, but interest rates are considerably above where they were back then. And that is, I think, one of the other important points, that there is a very clear intention to try and price in additional rate cuts on the US Treasury's curve. And I think it is worth just keeping an eye on that curve, because there's a very substantial belly in the curve. What this is clearly pricing in is that the bond market expects interest rates to fall precipitously over the course of the next year. They are pricing in at least another two base interest rate cuts, and that is being priced in terms of this considerable belly in the curve. What it is also doing, of course, is creating these inverted yield curve charts. I continue to keep an eye on the 10-year and the 2-year. It's down to 12 basis points. And generally speaking, it's not. The 10-year minus the 2-year is not as sensitive as some of the other measures, like the 30-year and the 3-month, or the 3-month and the 10-year. Part of the reason for that is because 3-month rates are a lot more volatile. When we do get an inverted yield curve, which is when this 10-2-year spread goes below zero, it's a lead indicator, generally speaking, of anything from 6 to 18 months for the next recession. The other, I think, important trend to pay attention to is the initial jobless claims. This does tend to be volatile, and it is really quite choppy, and it is prone to these 1 month failed upside breaks. But what we can also see is that the pace of this downtrend has been moderating, and when it does next start to trend higher, well, I think that's going to be incontrovertible proof that the market is starting to contract. That was certainly the case in the latter part of 2007, when the downtrend and the base formation, in fact, was broken out of. You can't very well have a recession without people losing their jobs. I'm posting two different charts in here today. One is of auto loan delinquencies, which are rising, and there is a lot of leverage among the consumer base in the USA with regard to their cars. It's not quite the same with the property markets, because property lending was so constrained in this cycle. Doesn't mean that there aren't people that are overextended, and certainly there are some rather expensive properties that are well in excess of the peaks seen in 2007 in some of the prime coastal locations. So it's not as if there's no risk, but it's considerably less risk on the consumer front than we had back in 2008, where you do have I think the leverage is in the auto sector combined with the student sector. But student default rates, in fact, have stabilized over the last 6 years and have, in fact, been showing some downward pressure. So there is that, I think, is worth considering. There's a lot of questions going on about whether there is, in fact, going to be a recession. And the Federal Reserve has been clear that they think it is a mid-cycle slowdown. What we did see in the S&P 500 today is that it rebounded again from the region of the trend mean, and this was a reasonably positive day despite the fact that it was relatively unchanged on the close. It is the rebound from the intraday low is, I think, more important. And the Nasdaq also is, I think, representative of a market which is capable of bouncing from here. As long as that sequence of higher reaction lows remains intact, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. There has been a great deal of, I think, well, let's put it the other way. There are a very large number of analysts that wish they had been early in predicting 2008. So there is almost a competitive sport in putting out the most bearish prognostication. But the reality is that's just not how tops form. Usually, it's not when people are cashed up that the market peaks. In fact, the fact that the market has held up so admirably against a background where a considerable number of funds have got large cash positions, that's a testament more to the strength of the market than its weakness. And that is one of the factors that I think has been completely underappreciated. There was a lot of cash that was taken out of the markets back in December, and it's probably unlikely to be recommitted to the market until the stock market is at a new all-time high on a sustained basis. The fact that Amazon pulled back violently last week is, I think, a testament to that particular conclusion. The fact that it is starting to steady now again in the region of the trend mean does suggest that this is a consolidation in the region of the previous peak, and perhaps not much more than that. Of course, there are the kinds of companies that have done spectacularly well in the first half of this year and are due some consolidation. And even here, Microsoft has bounced in here over the last couple of days to hold its sequence of ranges, one above another. When we think about the fact that the total for negative yields hit $15 trillion yesterday, well, gold has been rallying in tandem with that running total of negative yielding debt. But the much bigger picture from gold's perspective is the fact that we have competitive devaluation on behalf of so many of the world's governments. The fact that the renminbi has been devalued through seven this week is a catalytic event, regardless of the fact that it is not accelerating lower, but rather that they are trying to manage the descent. I think that is a clear testament to the fact that China wants to try and control this situation, but they need a weaker currency. And when we think about governments and currencies, well, there's no government wants a strong currency, but some need a weaker currency more than others. And China is very much in that group right now. The euro, for example, is now around the 1.12 area. So Europe also needs a weaker currency, but it doesn't seem particularly willing just yet to do what is necessary to truly devalue the currency, which would be to engage again with quantitative easing and potentially to abandon the fiscal austerity regime. I think abandoning that fiscal austerity regime is probably going to have to require some form of recession in a major European economy rather than some of the peripherals. But the other, I think it is also, it would be the institutional realization that the federalist project will have to go on the long finger, would really have to occur before Europe will truly abandon the fiscal austerity regime. If Europe is reasonably steady, it's still in a downtrend. So the reality here is that it was oversold when it got to 110. It's now approaching the 112 area, and it's potentially likely for some weakness to start to come through once more, with the likelihood of fiscal and monetary stimulus really picking up in the USA in the rest of this year. That is putting upward pressure on the yen, and so far the Bank of Japan has not been really clear that they are willing to do what is necessary to devalue the currency, and the yen was in stronger territory again in here today. When we think about how that is affecting the Nikkei, well, the Nikkei does tend to do better when the yen weakens. It is now right in the region of this 20,000 level. And 20,000 is a big psychological level for the Nikkei. It represents the upper side of the underlying 25-year base formation. So it is, I think, a rather important that it can continue to hold this level. The one, I think, fly in the ointment is the fact that the second section index has been ranging below the overhead top formation now for most of this year. And there is a very clear, more than 18-month sequence of lower rally highs. This does not look like a bullish chart. And in order to turn around, it is at least going to have to sustain a move back above the 6,725 area. When we think about the Topics Banks Index, any hope that it could have led on the upside has been rather dispelled over the course of this year. And it is now back testing the lows from back in 2016. So this is really quite a depressed level. And when we think about the valuations, it's got a PE of 8.45 and a yield of 4%. So the fact that they do have these low valuations is suggestive of a sector that is cheap, but it needs a growth catalyst to get people to be interested once more. And so far, that is doesn't appear to be apparent. With increasing stress between the USA and China and an increasing focus on the trade relationship, the fact that Vietnam is gaining a lot of business as a result of that should help the market to outperform, but it was in positive, it was in negative territory in the early part of this year and a little steadier in here today. It really would be ideal if it can hold the region of the trend mean and sustain a move back above the 1,000 level. What I also found interesting when looking at some of the smaller markets is the underperformance of those that are really heavily influenced by exports, and the Irish market is one of those. It trended higher in a really quite impressive rhythmic manner between approximately 2011 and at the end of 2017, but it increasingly has topping characteristics. And this has been a very lengthy range, and there is a downward bias to trading. There is some pressure coming through on the higher end of the housing market, and obviously Ireland is one of the countries that will do worst from a hard Brexit if that were in fact to go through. But also then when we look at the fact that the Japanese market doesn't look particularly strong, and the Korean market has broken on the downside. The fact that the German economy is on the cusp of recession, what this is, I think, clearly pointing towards is the fact that China's economy is slowing down, and that is having a knock-on effect for global trade, and that's falling most heavily on the big historical exporting countries. So there's a commonality to these charts that is quite clear. Then when we think about the continuous commodity index, well, it's been trending down for over a year as well. And it was in negative territory again in here today. Well, there's a clear sequence of lower rally highs here. Now, when we think about how are some of those commodity producers performing, well, the Australian market has been rallying really quite persistently since the beginning of this year, but it has now pulled back rather sharply this week, and this looks like a consolidation, and most particularly, it's a consolidation in the region of the previous peak, all the way back in 2007. So it's a natural area where we can anticipate some resistance coming through, and perhaps people starting to ask the question, what's next? The Aussie dollar is down to 67, but it's oversold in the short term, and I think we are due at least a pause and consolidation, not least because it's in the region of that spike appreciation we saw back in January. Then when we think about the pound, the machinations that are going on behind the scenes, the electoral math, and the real question about when or if to call another general election to try and improve that electoral math are all weighing on the pound. And it is hovering here around the 120 area, which represents the lows put in immediately after the Brexit referendum. So what that is suggestive of is that we have a similar degree of uncertainty 3 years on from that pivotal event. The pound versus the euro is, I think, the clearest way of anticipating how the market is viewing the outlook. The fact that the pound is now down to 108 and is back testing the lows from 2017. Well, I think anyone can see that there is a short-term oversold condition, but it's going to need a clear upward dynamic to really confirm that there is a willingness among investors to start pricing in a more benign outcome for the UK. Against this background, the FTSE, which is, I think, dominated, I think I saw a statistic last week to the effect that 80% of earnings in the FTSE are leveraged to the global economy. Well, it has pulled back in a violent manner 2 weeks ago and posted a downside Q reversal and has followed through on the downside in here this week. So this is a peak of at least near-term significance. It is at a minimum going to have to post a clear upper dynamic now to question potential for lower to lateral ranging. The FTSE 250 is much more representative of the domestic economy. It has been trending higher in a more persistent manner over the course of the last decade. It's now right in the region of the lower side of its range. Ideally, it's going to have to hold this area. The fact that Wall Street does appear to be bouncing should be beneficial to other stock markets. Then, when we think about the other big market internationally, well, China has got a lot of questions outstanding. And the H share index is pausing here around the psychological 10,000 level. It has got a lot of work to do in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I think considering the uncertainties around it, there is scope here for additional downside. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.